Okay, let's get started. Today we are going to discuss the sugya of Zeya. The sugya of Zeya is a fascinating sugya in that there is a sugya in Shas about oven usage for kosher food and non-kosher food. And in that sugya in Shas, the word Zeya doesn't even appear. There's a Gemara Maseches Pesachim that discusses cooking treif and kosher in the same oven at the same time, uncovered, or milchig and fleishig in the same oven at the same time, uncovered. And the Gemara's whole discussion is whether recha milsa or recha lav milsa. Do we assume that the aroma, the fragrance, the smell that emanates from a food and therefore might get into the other food is considered milsa? Is it considered significant or is it considered insignificant? And we paskin that lechadchila recha milsa, but b'diavad recha lav milsa, and therefore it's going to be kosher. So that is machlokas in the sugya Maseches Pesachim. What is stunning about that is that the Gemara never says, well, wait a second, if the two foods are in the same oven at the same time, forget about recha, isn't there also zeya? Isn't there also steam that's coming from one food and hitting the other food and therefore affecting each other? So for some reason, it does not discuss Zeya. So where does Zeya come from? And then we'll have to figure out, is Zeya in fact a concern in our ovens, even though for some reason it was not a concern apparently in Talmudic ovens? So we have to just have like a basic understanding of what a kira is, what a tanur is, to even like understand what they were talking about. So a kira was an oven that was shaped like a box, where there was a fire burning inside the box, and there were two ways you can cook on a kira. One way is that you would put a pot over a hole that was on the top of the box. So if you have a box, right? I knew there's a reason I brought my smart. So if you have a box and there's a fire inside, so you could put a, let's say like a 9x13 pan that covers the entire top of the box, and obviously the box is going to fill with heat, and that's going to cook the pan over the top of the box. Or you could take, let's say, a smaller pan and put it inside the box, right next to the fire, and it will cook from the fire inside the box. Or you could do both at the same time. You have one pan inside the box right next to the fire, another pan over the hole covering the box, and they're both going to cook from the heat of the fire that's inside the box, right? That's how a kira would work. When it comes to what we're going to be talking about is not the grates of an oven. We're going to be talking about the inside airspace of the oven. So let's just quickly mention the grates for a second. You know, the racks or the grates that are in the oven. Generally speaking, the reason we're not concerned about it is because food does not touch the grates directly. We use pots and pans to put on the grates. If food would touch the grates directly, then we'd have a problem, right? L'chora, it would be difficult to use the same ones for milchigs and fleishigs, to use the same oven for milchigs and fleishigs. If you were to put cheese directly on the grate and then put meat directly on the grate, that would obviously be a problem. In fact, some women, when they make challah, they do the wonderful mitzvah of hafrashas challah, which is what they're supposed to do if you make a dough of a large enough quantity, of a large enough size. And the halacha is that after you mafresh the challah is a din of truma. We don't have any kohanim tahorim to give the truma to nowadays. So what do we do with the challah? We burn it, right? So how do you burn it? So some women just put it directly on the grate in the oven. That's a problem, because if you do that, it's asr. It's truma's asr for a zar. We're not allowed to, or asr for anyone who's tamei. We're not allowed to eat the challah. So by putting it directly on the grate, it actually trafes up the oven. So that would be a problem if you put it directly on the rack or the grate of the oven. Now, it's true, sometimes there are spills in an oven, and that should mean that the racks will need to be kosher also. But since a bliya that enters into a kli is not yotzim in a kli unless there's rotav, unless there's a liquid medium to remove it from the kli, we don't have to worry if meat juice spilled on the racks, and then at a later date you put a milchik pan on that rack, as long as the rack is clean. So we'd rather not rely on that lechadchila, but Rav Moshe has a long explanation of why that's okay not to kasher the racks in between using for milchiks and using for fleishiks. And, you know, even though many are machmir to kasher the racks for Pesach, right? Obviously, because of chumah d'chametz, but the racks are not going to be our issue. We're going to assume that we rely that you could use the same oven racks, the same grates for milchigs and fleishigs. We're more concerned with the atmosphere of the inside of the oven. Can you use the same airspace for milchigs and for fleishigs within an oven? So let's understand what's behind all of this, what the concept of zeya is, where it comes from. So up until now, we've been talking about what happens when a tipas chalav touches meat or touches a meat pot, right? That was yesterday. A drop of milk hits a piece of meat or hits the outside of a pot where meat is inside the pot. What if you don't have a tipas chalav? You don't have an actual drop of milk. You have steam emanating from milk that goes into a fleishig pot, or steam emanating from meat juice that goes into a milchig pot. What is the status of steam? Is steam the same as the original? Is milky steam the same as milk? Is meaty steam the same as meat? So there are two potential sources for the inyan of zeya. Just to be clear, the way to pronounce the word in this context is zeya. Zeya means sweat or steam, depending on the context that you're discussing. Not to be confused with the word zia, that appears in Masechta Shabbos Daf Pei Ches, where the Gemara talks about, and in Masechta Brachos, so when we talk about how Kabbalah Satorah happened, be'ema b'yira b'retes u'bezia, that we had a trembling fear. It was an overwhelming experience of Kabbalah Satorah. That's why Balkeri is not allowed to learn Torah, because it has to have the same sense of eima yir retazia. Balkeri represents a certain sense of kalas rosh, right? That's the sugya Maseches Brachos. But that's what you know. We do not say that Kabbalah Satorah was with sweat. Kabbalah Satorah was a zia, was trembling. It was not a sweaty experience. That's Shai Shechter told me that like this was one of like his father's mishigasim. Like he gets very upset when he hears people say that Kabbalah Satorah was with zeya. He says no, it was with zia. He says like he remembers like he feels like every night before he went to sleep when he was a little boy, his father would say like, remember Eima Yir Retes and Zia, right? Not Zaya, Zia, right? So he said that was... okay, anyway, so over here we're talking about Zaya. We're talking about not sweat, but we're talking about steam. So there are two possible sources for the inyan of steam. One possible source is a Chubas HaRash, Klal Chav Simen Chavav, where the Chubas HaRash is quoted over here in the tour from Adoni Avi HaRashzal, and in the Beis Yosef, a little bit more elaborately, but not fully elaborately, where they bring a raya from a Mishnah in Seder Taras, I think it's in Maseches Machshirin, that talks about steam taking on the status of Tumas Mashkin. And the Rosh says that that proves, if steam can have the status of Tumas Mashkin, isn't that a raya that steam is a liquid with regard to Isser V'Heter, just like it's a liquid with regard to Tumah and Tahara? If it has a din of Tumas Mashkin, shouldn't it also have a din of the Mashke itself when it comes to Isser V'Heter, when it comes to what's kosher and what's not kosher? And the Rosh therefore concludes, Machvas Shel Chalav, Shenasnu Bekira Tachas Kedera Shel Basar, Hazeya Ola V'Nivla B'Kedera. So you have your kira, you have a milchik pan inside the kira, on the bottom of the kira, and it's open, and then covering the top of the kira, you have a fleishik pot. So what's coming up from the milchik pan? You have steam of milk coming up and hitting the bottom of the fleishik pot. That is problematic, says the Rosh, that trafes up the fleishik pot, that asers the fleishik pot, because the zeya, the steam of milchig, is milchig. Another possible raya is based on the Mishnah, or based on the discussion we had yesterday, about a tipas chalav shenafel l'toch hachaticha. So we spoke about, what if a tipas chalav falls onto a pot? So even if it's above the level of the food in the pot, if you're menayer the kedera, or if you cover the kedera, so then it's ki'ilu, it's the tipas chalav has fallen keneged atavshil, even though it's not keneged atavshil. Why is that kilu it's keneged atavshil? Because the entire inside of the pot, when the pot is covered, is filled with the steam of the contents of the pot. Ooh, so you see the steam of the contents of the pot have a din of the contents themselves. So, and the reason is that all the steam hits the top of the kedera, and there's loads of steam that fills the entire pot, and that's the equivalent of rotav. It's the equivalent of the sauce or the juices of the pot itself. That's what we just saw in the Rama yesterday, that we view a tipas chalav shelo kenegad tafshil as if it's kenegad tafshil and the pot is covered. So those are our two sources for the concept of zeya. So again, one source is a Mishnah that talks about tumas mashkin, that zeya takes on the status of tuma of a mashke itself, and therefore the Rush says, "Oh, must be the same by Yisra Hatter." And the other is the case of a pot that's actually covered, where you actually cover a pot, so the inside, whatever's inside that little area of airspace in the pot, is so filled with zeya that we view that as if it's filled with the liquid itself.
Yesterday, though, we were saying that if it falls above where the tafshil is, then that's problematic. It's not going to be locked up. But if, whether it's falling here or over here.
If you remember, the Rama said if the pot is covered, even if it falls above the level of the tafshil, it's considered that it fell kenegad tafshil. Because when the pot is covered, it fills with zeya. Right? That's the concept of zeya. Now, the Mishkanos Yaakov has a tshuva where he questions these rayas. He doesn't think either of these is a raya that we should apply the inyan of zeya to an oven. Meaning the idea would be that if you have an uncovered food in an oven, it fills with steam, and that steam is therefore going to be problematic. So Mishkanos Yaakov, first raya first. He said, Tumen Tahara. You know, you bring a raya about that it has tumas mashkin. That has nothing to do with Yisra V'Hatter. Hilchas Tumah L'Chud. Right? We know that the rules of Dinim of Tum and Tahara are totally different than the rules of Dinim of Yisra V'Hatter. There are three categories of halacha in Torah. What are the three categories of halacha? Mamanus, Tum and Tahara, and Yisra V'Hatter. Beidam l'dam, beidin l'din, beinega l'nega. Right? That's what the Gra points out on that pasuk. That bein dam l'dam relates to Yisra V'Hatter, because dam nida, a woman is a tamela, is asur l'bayda. Bein din l'din relates to choshe mishpah, relates to dina mamnis. And bein nega l'nega relates to tumah v'tahara. Right? They're three totally separate. And we don't learn from one. Isur mi mamona, lo yalfina, the Gemara tells us. We don't learn from one to the other. There's no crossover in limudim from one area of halacha to the other area of halacha. The greatest raya, the simplest raya, is what do you do in the case of a safek in halacha? What's the rule of a safek in halacha? So the answer is, depends. Are you talking about a safek in dini mamonis? Are you talking about a safek in Yisra V'Hatter? Or are you talking about a safek in Tumah Mutara? What's the halacha by a safek in Yisra V'Hatter, since that's the one you started to call out? What's the halacha of a safek in Yisra V'Hatter?
What's
a raisa? Safek to raisa l'chumra, safek to rabbanan l'kula. And what's the rule if you have a safek in dini mamonis? I don't know if you owe me money or you don't owe me money. Or according to Sumchus, whatever, there are rules, but it's not Safik Daraisa L'chum or Safik Darabana L'chula. And what's the rule if you have a Safik in Tumah V'Tahara? We learn it from Sota, actually, because the Torah calls it Tumah. Savi Tumah Bereshis Rab is Tahar. Savi Tumah Bereshis Yachid is Tameh. All of a sudden, it depends where you are. Whether you're Bereshis Yachid or Bereshis Rab, it makes no sense. It's not logical. It's Gzeres HaKasuv. But we see that there are totally different rules for the different areas of halacha. So says the Mishkanos Yaakov in the Tshuva, he says the raya from Tum Tara is not a raya at all. Hilchus Tumah V'Tara L'chud, Hilchus Yisavahata L'chud. The Torah divides Bein Dam L'Dam, Bein Din L'Din, Bein Nega L'Nega, Mamonu Me'Yisura Lo Yalfino. He can't bring rayas from a Mishnah Machshirin to halachas in Yeridaya, to halachas in Yisavahata. As far as the other raya from the pot cover, that's not a raya, because maybe the covering only mixes the contents of the pot because there's actual rotav that's spritzing around inside of the pot. Maybe that has nothing to do with zeya at all. Maybe we consider the whole pot as if it's filled up because you give it a stir and there's rotav all over the place. It's not just zeya that's coming out of the pot. It actually dirties up the entire pot, meaning the way, I guess the way Rav Shachter likes to say this often, it's more than Zeya over there. It's what does he call it? He calls it something else. It's something much thicker than just regular Zeya. It's like a very, very, very thick steam that's beyond Zeya, that's inside of a pot. But in an oven, it's just simply zeya, it's just simply steam. So not necessarily going to be the same thing. So nevertheless, even though the Mishkanos Yaakov questions whether we have this concept of zeya in Yoredeya, in Issa V'Heter, la halacha, we clearly do assume that there is such a din of zeya. It's just good to know this Mishkanos Yaakov, because if you need snifim lahakel, it's always good to know that there is a shita that holds that the whole thing doesn't exist, right? That the whole concern doesn't exist. So halacha, we assume like the Rush, and the Mechaber quotes it here in Shulchan Aruch, Sivitzadi Bey, Siv Ches, where he quotes the Rush, that if you put a frying pan with milk directly under a fleshik pot with meat inside the kira, meaning the frying pan is placed in the kira while the pot of meat is placed on the top of the hole on the top of the kira, the steam from the milk reaches the fleshik pot and it makes it asur. Right? That's very clear in Shulchan Aruch. The Ramah says that the din of the Shulchan Aruch is only if the pan is uncovered. Right, the milk pan is uncovered. Why does it have to be uncovered? Obviously, that's the only way the steam is going to escape, right? Only if it's uncovered. The steam is emanating directly from the milk, and when the steam reaches the pot, the Ramah adds another qualification, the steam has to still be Yad Soledespo. It still has to be hot steam. If by the time the steam reaches the pot, it's already cooled off, you can just wipe it off, and then it's fine. But it still has to be Yad Soledespo. If it's Yad Soledespo, then it's going to be a problem. So, therefore, says the Ramah, you're allowed to hang meat above your stovetop. Because even if there are open milk pans on your stovetop with hot milk on the stove, by the time the steam is going to reach the meat hanging above the stovetop, you ever see people like hang salamis or something, right? Some meat that's drying or something like that. So the meat that's hanging above the stovetop, by the time the milk zeya hits it, it won't be Yad Soledespo anymore, and therefore it's going to be fine. However, if the steam condenses and is visible on the meat, you do need to wipe it off, like we learned at the beginning of Siman Sadi Aleph regarding cheese and meat that touch each other. We don't paskin like the Mishkanos Yaakov. We paskin in Shulchan Aruch that Zeya is an issue, but always good to keep the Mishkanos Yaakov in the back of our minds. Now, it's also interesting, the Prima Gadim, in the Mishpat Zav, in the beginning of Siman Sadi Dalet, and the Pri Chadash, Siman Kuf Chav Aleph, say that you can kasher with Zeya also. Meaning if Zeya can trave something up, then when something does become trave, you can kasher with Zeya. You can use steam to kasher. A lot of times people before Pesach will ask, can they kasher their countertops using a steamer? Well, says the Prima Gadim, definitely if the way it became trave is with steam, you can kasher with steam. That's the principle known as Kabbalah Kachpol. The same way it absorbed, that's the way it's going to expel the tam. The Badei Shulchan and the Biurim is not sure whether you need, if it trafed it up with zeya that emanated from a pot that was al gabei ha'esh, can you take steam that's no longer al gabei ha'esh and kasher with it? Okay, so that's an interesting suffix. Do you need zeya that's al gabei ha'esh, or do you assume no, all steam is the same? Obviously, steam is hot. In order to generate steam, it needs to be very hot. Okay, so that's a suffix the Badei Shulchan raises. Good. So when is zeya an issue? We have to be careful in terms of metzias to determine what constitutes zeya and what doesn't. Is it only in an enclosed area, or even the steam that comes out in an open area? So l'chora, this really depends on the source of where do we learn zeya from. Which raya do you hold of? If the basis is the sugya of kisui kedera, the covering of a pot, so then it's obviously a very, very tiny self-contained area that's totally closed up. I mean, if your whole limud is from inside of a pot with a cover on it, whatever airspace is left inside of a pot with a cover in it, then you're saying, yeah, there's zeya in a very closed, self-contained, concentrated, steamy area. But maybe open spaces wouldn't have zeya. Or maybe spaces that are vented wouldn't have zeya. But if you go with the raya from the Mishnayos and Machshirin, then it would seem that there's zeya even in open areas. So what do the poskim have to say about this? The Bach is nota lahakel. And in Shulchan Aruch, the case given of zeya is a pot cover where it's definitely contained. Right? He writes, Kivan sheyesh lo makom lispashit l'tzadim, the Bach writes, Ein lanu lomar shenivla bevadai b'kedera, ve'ein lanu osu makedera mepnei osa zeya. That if the zeya has room to escape, it has room to go out into the air, and it's not contained, it's not held in a tight spot, then we're not going to ask for based on such zeya. What would be an example of that, where you have zeya, but it can easily escape?
How
What did you say? Okay, let's say there are holes on top of the cover. What else?
Grill.
Why is it grill?
You're outside, so
meaning an open grill.
Yeah.
Okay, but where? What would be on top of it?
You're hanging something.
If you hang something, what about a stovetop? Right, a stovetop would be an open area, l'chora, right, and that's what the Rama was talking about, where it's open on top of a stove. Or what if you're in an office building and they have, in the office, they have a hot water dispenser. So I see my coworker goes right up to the hot water dispenser, fills from the hot water dispenser his trefa soup, right? You know, one of those instant soup things, but it doesn't say whatever the from companies are, tradition or whatever, right? It says, I don't know, chaser schmaltz soup, right? So he fills it in, his instant chaser schmaltz soup. Can you go and use that same hot water dispenser? So it's a very open area, right? Meaning it goes into the soup, but then it's the whole office, you know, you can escape too. Or do you assume that, no, all the steam went right back into that spout, and now everything that you take out of that spout is going to be treif. So the Bach is mekel on this issue. However, the Rama, based on the Trum session, does not seem to be mekel, because what did the Rama say about the stovetop? He said, why is it that you're allowed to hang meat over a stovetop that has milcha cooking? Why? When we say what was the seder? It's not going to be atzoledes. Sounds like, but if it were atzoledes, then I'm worried about the zeya. Then the zeya is a problem. So the Rama seems to be machmir. He only says it's not a problem because it's not hot. But the implication is that the fact that it's an open area is not enough of a reason to be mekel. So we have to be machmir for the Rama, because, you know, we're machmir for the Rama. We're not gonna rely on a Bach when the Rama is explicit otherwise. So far, how many potential clues do we have about Zaya? Two, right? We have the Mishkanos Yaakov, who says the whole thing doesn't exist. And we have the Bach, who says, well, it doesn't exist in an open area. Right? Those are the two clues we have so far. But we don't paskin like either of those things. Right? We clearly paskin that it does exist. And we clearly paskin it even exists in an open area, because that's what the Rama says. What's the case of Zaya that the Rama is talking about and that the Rush was talking about, though? The case is the Zaya goes where?
Into the bottom of the pot.
Into the bottom of the pot. Or into the food. Directly into a food or into a pot. Is that what happens in our ovens when you use the same oven for milchig and then for fleishig afterwards? You have Zeya that's entering, that's coming straight from a food into your fleishig pot? No, that's not what's happening. What are we concerned about? I use an oven for milchig, and let's say open milchig, and then that open milchig produces a Zeya that goes where? Into the walls of the oven, or the roof of the oven. Then I'm going to use the oven for fleishig, and what's going to happen? Zeya is going to come out of the fleishig and do what? Go into the roof of the oven again. I still don't see a problem. Where's the problem going to be? The problem has to be that it then comes out of the roof of the oven, meaning that new zeya from the meat draws out the zeya of the milchig from the top of the oven and goes back down into the food. If it doesn't go back down into the food, I don't have a problem. You have to say that it so fills up the oven that it's considered as if the zeya that is now being drawn out, the tam of the zeya that's being drawn out of the roof of the oven, is refilling the entire oven or dripping back down into the food. So the original case of zeya in the Tshuvas HaRash was about the item that was hit by the zeya. You're cooking milk in the bottom of the oven and a pot of meat is right on top of it. It's not as clear that it can go and then draw out blios from an oven and then drip back down into the food. Shulchan Aruch does not talk about that case. So to apply Zeya to our ovens, we have to make a little bit of a leap. Rav Shechter holds we should only be machmir for that level of Zeya in a very closed area, like inside a covered pot. Meaning, to be concerned that it's going to come out of the roof and then come back down is only when you have a very, very thick steam. It will go directly up, even in an open area, but it will not draw flavor out and come back down like it would in a closed pot. So we can use the Bach, who is totally makel in an open area, at least for this case. I mean, that's what Shach said. Meaning, if you have a case that's somewhat of an open area, you can use the Bach, who's makel in an open area, to say, it's at least not going to bring it back down. The Raman never said it was going to bring it back down. The Badei HaShulchan quotes this idea, and this seems reasonable to assume lahalacha. Badei HaShulchan explains, V'hazeya dina ka'oso mashke shenotra hazeya mimenu. The zeya has the same status as the liquid that created that zeya. V'afkan hazeya dina ka'chalav. So zeya of milk has a din of milk. V'avali ketipas chalav shenafla al-kadeira shel basar shosar sa-kadeira v'amachal shebetocha. Based on the rush. It's as if the milk itself entered the pot. So if the steam is hot when it reaches the meat, the milk flavor will be absorbed by the meat. But the milchik frying pan is still going to be kosher and remain milchik because the steam doesn't absorb the flavor of the meat and bring it back down to the pan. Right? The Ramah did not say that. The Ramah said, oh, if it's still hot, if it's still the atzalendus when it hits the meat, then the meat is a problem. What did he not say? That the milchik pan is a problem. He didn't say that. But the Shulchan holds that an oven is considered a closed area. Our ovens are a closed area. They're like the inside of a pot. Rav Shechter holds that it's considered like an open area. Rav Shechter used the term hevel. That there's a difference between zeya and hevel. Hevel is like a strong steam. Hevel does have the power to take flavor out of the walls of a pot. Like a kisui kideira. If you were to cover a pot, that creates such a hevel inside the pot that whatever, if you were to take a milchit pot cover and put it on a fleshic pot while there's flesh inside the pot, yes, it will trafe up the flesh inside the pot. Because that kind of hevel, that kind of strong zeya, that would work to actually transfer in both directions. Just one more thing. The Ramah also says that be'inan shishim b'tavshel shebekdeira neged hachalav shebemachvas. That if the pot has 60 times the amount of milk in the pan, the pot on top has 6 times the amount of milk in the pan, then the food will be mutter anyway. Because the zeya that's created by the milk can't be more than the milk itself. Okay, Badei HaShulchan raises a question. He says, I understand. It could be that you should subtract whatever's left be'en on the bottom. Because even if the zeya is milchig, you should say, well, how much milk did I start with in that pot? If there was 10 ounces of milk that I started with, and now after all the steam came out, there's 8 ounces left. You shouldn't measure by how much milk the pot started with. You should measure with how much came out, right? With the 2 ounces. But the Shulchan leaves that as a tzarchi. We haven't said 100% yet what we paskin by ovens, but we're already seeing something starting to take shape. And a lot of this depends on what do we look at our oven as? Do we look at our ovens as an open area or like a closed pot? If you look at our ovens like a closed pot, then you're obviously going to be much more machmir about the zeya. We could also see why Chazal, in the sugya of Recha Milsa, Recha Lav Milsa, was the Pesach Mayin Vav, I forgot it. But in the sugya of Recha Milsa, Recha Lav Milsa, they weren't concerned with zeya. Why were they not concerned with zeya? Apparently, they assumed that it was open enough that it's not going to be a zeya problem. But when something is very closed, then you have to worry about zeya coming back down. Yeah.
Similarly, according to the Ramah, he's saying that our oven maybe nowadays it's more difficult to hold them.
I mean, from a zeya, one after the other. Yeah.
Yeah. Uncovered.
Uncovered. We'll get to that. Yeah, it seems that way. Yeah.
Why are we worried about the zeya going taking the flavor into the walls, then that coming out?
That's exactly what we're talking about.
So even in an open area.
So right? That's what we're saying. That Schechter is suggesting that in an open area that doesn't happen. It doesn't. The zeya is not strong enough to draw the tam back out or bring it back into the food. That you would need such a thick zeya that you would call that like hevel. That would be like the kisoy kedera. But in an oven, you don't really have that same level of zeya. At the same time? It seems not. I guess you wouldn't call that derech bishul.
You can assume that the hevel of the walls of the oven are being cooked, and then you...
Meaning if you take a milchig pot cover and put it on the fleshik pot. In an oven, you don't have that. You don't have that same level of thickness of the... Once, so that's a question of when something loses its status of milchigs or fleshigs. It could be that once something is totally burnt and it's charcoal, you know, then it's no longer milchigs or fleshigs. It's totally lost its character.
We assume that a certain point in steam, that's even if it's tucked in the walls of the oven, that at a certain point in time, there's like half rate goes away.
Oh, okay, we'll get there. Okay. Now, before we even get to that, what type of food generates zeya? Is zeya, every food that gets heated up is going to produce zeya? Is that necessarily the case? So Prima Gadim is quoted by the Pesachei Tshuva over here in Sif Katan Vav. He brings a raya from a Lashon Rambam that zeya of a food is not called zeya. Only zeya of a liquid is zeya. Foods, solids, don't create zeya. Ooh, now that's another major kula. If solid foods don't create zeya, you bake a cheesecake open in your oven, you have nothing to worry about when you then put open meat in your oven. Because the solid cheesecake won't create zeya. Prima Gadim, again, quoted by the Pesachei Tshuva, brings a raya from a Lashon Rambam that zeya of a food is not called zeya. You can only have zeya from liquids, not from solids. He even goes so far as to say that if nitacha ochel v'nasa kimashke, gamein zeya also kamoso. Even if you have a food that has melted or heated up to the point where it's liquefied, like what? Sometimes you'll have gravy or fat. You have fats that if you heat them up, they liquefy. It's a solid, it's not a liquid. It doesn't create zeya. Wow. It's another major tzad l'hakel. So are we keeping cheshvin of our tzad l'hakel? What do we have? Mishkanos Yaakov, zeya doesn't exist. There's no such thing called zeya. Then we have the Bach, that what? An open area, you're not going to be concerned for Zeya. Then we have the Prima Gadim, that a solid doesn't create any Zeya. And then we could discuss, maybe our ovens also are an open area, right? Okay. Now, some Achronim, including the Beis Shlomo and some Kufsanach Beis, the Yad Yehuda, bring a raya from a tour in Hilchas Pesach and some Tafnun Aleph, who speaks about a piece of bread giving off zeya, that this Prima Gadim must be wrong. Meaning the Tur seems to assume that bread produces zeya, at least l'gabei Hilchas Pesach. So unless you say that's a chumr d'chametz, apparently even solids can produce zeya. So at least that's a machlokas. Good. Now comes along Rav Moshe, Yardei Chelik Bei Simin Mem. And Rav Moshe says, I'm not going to read the whole tshuva now because he says a lot of very interesting things. He says, we should pass like the Torah that solids produce zeya. But maybe we recognize that solids can produce zeya, but it doesn't mean that solids always do produce zeya. What does he mean? If you look at the solid food cooking in your oven and you don't see zeya, you don't have to assume that there's zeya. If a liquid got really hot, you have to assume zeya. If a solid got really hot, and you see zeya, you have to say, yes, that zeya is halachically zeya. But if you don't see any zeya, then you don't have to assume zeya. Most of the time, solids don't give off steam. So you could assume it doesn't. But if you see the steam, then you cannot ignore it. So if you want to bake cookies in a fleshig oven with the intention of eating those cookies with milk, you want to dip your cookies in milk, that's a thing people do. According to Rav Moshe, mutter. Because cookie dough is dry, it doesn't emit zeya, and as long as there's no actual meat in the oven when you put the cookies in the oven, right, it's going to be fine. There are those that are machmir even in that case because they're concerned that there might be meat residue in the oven. I mean, this assumes a clean oven. Everything we're talking about assumes a clean oven. That if your oven is totally cleaned out, so there's no actual meat juice sitting pooled at the bottom of your oven or something. So you're not actually cooking meat and the cookies in the oven at the same time. So there's no meat zeya getting into the cookies. Right? It's just the meat. There was meat an hour ago in that oven, uncovered. Now you put dry cookies in that oven. totally mutter. That's not fleishig at all. You could dip those cookies in the milk. So says Rav Moshe, unless you happen to see Zeya coming from those cookies.
Why are we only concerned of Zeya coming out from whatever food's being at the time, mixing and then coming back down? Why are we concerned about the meat juice of the previous Zeya that's still there?
Where is it?
You cook meat juice in an oven.
Yeah.
And then there's obviously Zeya.
Where?
In the walls of the oven.
Okay.
And then after that, you bake cookies.
Uh-huh.
Why are we concerned about the previous meat juice?
Where's that meat juice going? How's that meat juice getting anywhere?
So the only way they can transfer is through Zaya?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or if you touch something directly to the roof of the oven, the walls there. Yeah. Now, yeah.
Biologically, though, like Zaya is only produced, steam is only produced when a liquid turns to a gaseous form. So the only way that solid food has Zaya is there's liquid inside the solid foods.
It's not biology. It's
chemistry.
Yeah. Right. Yes.
So even by solid food, meaning if it's bread, there's not going to be any liquid in bread. So eat like.
Right. So from a neuroscience perspective, right. So meaning en chidabi from scientifically, it and that's why it doesn't happen. Where does it happen? What method of cooking? Dafka finds liquid molecules and heats up those liquid molecules, and Dafka creates the most steam possible. Microwaves. And a microwave typically is small. Smaller than an oven. Toaster, by the way, also typically smaller than an oven. So even if you hold an oven, it's big, it's open, maybe you don't have all the same kulas. I just got a shayla 2 days ago. A guy emailed me that it's after Tisha B'Av now, and they're remodeling their kitchen. Right? Meaning they waited until after 3 weeks are over, they're remodeling their kitchen. They don't have an oven for the next 2 weeks, he said. I was going to tell him, you're dreaming if it's only 2 weeks. Do not believe the contractor. You know, whatever. So they don't have an oven for the next 6 months. Right? So the Shaila is, they have a decent-sized toaster oven. Can they use it for both milk and flations? So this, I said, just wait 2 days, we'll get there. Okay, so let's get there right now. Ovens. When discussing ovens, you got to talk about both Recha and Zeya, right? Recha means aroma. Two separate items are cooked simultaneously in the same oven. That's where Recha is an issue. So Machlokas in the Gemara is Recha Milsa, Recha Lav Milsa. In Simon Kuf Ches in Yeredeya, we pass in Lechadchila, we are concerned for Recha, and that's why we don't cook milk and meat simultaneously, even in a very large oven. Even if it's like a big industrial oven, you don't put uncovered milk and uncovered meat in the same oven at the same time. L'chadchila. If you did, kosher. From a Recha perspective, it's kosher. B'di'evet Recha lav milsa. Like we said, Chazal do not discuss Zeya in ovens, which seems to be a problem. So it could be that Zeya wasn't relevant in their ovens, but it is relevant in our ovens. Maybe our ovens are smaller. So, or maybe our ovens aren't as hot. Maybe in their ovens, they were so hot that as soon as the Zeya came out, it burnt up and evaporated. And in our ovens, it sits there a little more, maybe. So it would seem that Zeya should apply. Maybe the Zeya described in the poskim, like Rosh Hechter suggests, is a much more powerful form of Zeya. It's what we call it before, Hevel, right? When opening the oven door, are you hit in the face with like steam? So when you open a pot, the lid of a pot, put your face right over it. Don't do this. You're right? And you open the pot. What happens? It hits you. There are ovens like that get so hot that like you're hit with like these. There are industrial ovens. I saw when I did right before I learned Yoredeya. I should have done it after I learned Yoredeya when I was in Y.S.M.I.C.H.A. So I joined this program called Ask OU, which was a 3-week intensive kashrus training program. We went to hotels and hotel kitchens and things like that, and restaurants and whatever, just to see how kashrus works. So they had like, it was like a walk-in oven. I mean, it's not meant for people. It was this huge, like, you know those big trays, those carts that you like wheel in with like trays and trays of food? They would wheel the whole cart into the oven, and then another one, and then another one. So when they shut the oven, it was a safety mechanism. You couldn't open the door for an hour after the oven was turned off. Because if you would, it was very dangerous. If you'd open the oven, it would knock you out cold. I mean, hot. Whatever, it would knock you down. Right? So, but you don't feel that. You open an oven, it feels a little warm, but it's not like, you know, you're not hit in the face with steam. So, some posts can assume that way. That's what Rav Shachter assumes. Another reason to assume our ovens are different, there's a sefer called Chuvas Evan Yakara, Chelek Gimel Simin Yirches, Rav Binyamin Weiss, not to be confused with Rav Binyamin Weiss, the current chief rabbi of the city of Montreal, the brother of Rav Asher Weiss. So in the Chuvas Evan Yakara, Chelek Gimel Simin Yirches, quoted by a wonderful sefer called Ohel Yaakov, which is a nice sefer in Yerideya, he says that Hazeya ha'olam in amachal nisrefes kodem shenivlas b'dufano satanur. Zeya just burns up right away. Ovens are so hot, steam completely evaporates before it reaches the walls of the oven. It's not a problem. So according to the Chuvas Evan Yakara, you can cook milchig liquid in a fleishig ben yomo oven. Meaning you had fleishig there this morning, cooking, open. Now you can cook milchig there, open. No problem of recha, because the oven is clean. Recha is only when they're simultaneous. And no problem with zeya, because it immediately burns up, so there's no zeya in our ovens. Yes. But Rav Shachter requires that the oven cools down in between. The Evan Yakara does not. It just needs to cool down in between. So leave it for an hour, let it cool down to room temperature, and then right away you can cook there. That is a significant cooler. Most postmen do not assume like Rav Shachter on that. But Rav Shachter, you know, just to be honest, you know, put it out there. Yeah. No, no, it's talking about our ovens. We can ask Rav Shachter, we have access to it.
You're saying like ovens change that much that like, then it would just be like steam just coming out of it?
No, he said the poskim never spoke about Zeya in ovens. It's not in the Gemara, it's not in the Shulchan Aruch. Mechitesi that there's Zeya in ovens. So it's a huge chiddush to say that there's Zeya in ovens. So he would say, look, if it's still full of heat, so then you have to be choshish that there's some zayah there. So you wait till it cools down. Rav Moshe is the opposite extreme, right? As makel as that is, Rav Moshe is the opposite extreme. Again, in our ovens, they may be large enough that the zayah is not considered to be concentrated in a small place. So maybe it goes up, it doesn't come back down. Right, so it could be the top of the oven becomes fleishig, but it has no impact because nothing you cook in is going to bring that zeya back down. You wouldn't be allowed to stick milchig garlic bread to the top of the oven if it cooked fleishig or something. No one does that anyway. Rav Moshe says that. Also, our ovens are vented. There are vents in the back of the oven that, you know, go into the chimney. You don't realize this, but they do. Our ovens are vented. So it doesn't stay. A lot of the heat escapes. So Rav Moshe writes that the vents don't help with Zeya, and our ovens are still considered to have concentrated Zeya. And that would mean that you're not allowed to cook milchig in the same oven that you cook fleishig. And in the Sefer Ol Yaakov and in the Badei Shulchan, they explain that when you cook something milchig, the milky steam will be absorbed in the walls of the oven. Then you cook something fleishig in the same oven, the steam will rise and make the walls treif. And we're worried that the treif steam is now accumulating and coming out of the oven walls and dripping back into your food. And therefore, when you get your oven, you should decide which gender of food is going to always be cooked covered. Either you're always going to make milchig covered, and fleishig will be allowed to be uncovered, or you're always going to cover fleishig. One second. Now, Rav David Rav David Feinstein, Shav Rufu Shleima, from what I understand, he was doing much, much better. Rav David Feinstein is quoted in the Sefer Ol Yaakov, Dima she'aviv zatzal kasav b'shut igros Moshe lachush l'zeya b'tanurim shalanu. That which Rav Meisha is concerned about Zeya, in our ovens, haynu rak l'chadchila, aval b'diavad li'eset tzorech enu ala kesafik Zeya, v'lachain b'nogeya l'zeya sochum yesh lakal b'diavad. Meaning, Rav Moshe said explicitly, when am I concerned about Zeya? By liquids or by solids that you see the Zeya? But if you didn't see the Zeya and you only had food in there, you didn't have liquids in there, we could be making. Meaning, someone should test. After you take a food out of the oven, a meat in a sauce, take a towel and wipe the top of the oven and see what comes off. Is there Zeya there or not? If there is, it should meat juice should come right off the top of the oven. Right? So he says, we should be Mvar the Metzias. That's what he says. That b'diavad there are many tzadim mahakel that our modern day ovens produce zeya from liquid is only the cheshash on the chachila b'diavad you can rely on the fact that ovens don't have zeya. So lahalacha, according to Rav Moshe, decide what to make your oven. Milach graflation. Whenever you put the other type in the oven, you should see to it, see if it's dry and won't create zeya problem, and if it would create zeya, you should cover it. Most milchik food we put into an oven is like. Not exactly dry, but not exactly liquid. Ziti, lasagna, you know, it's not like... If it was dry, it would be fine, even according to Rav Moshe. If it's... Unless you see Zeya coming from it. Covering would seem to be an easy solution. However, the Gemara tells a story of a certain kidney that had fat on it, and it said that the chelev doesn't spread because the krum, the fat covering the kidney, is a membrane, a natural membrane that stops the blios. And the Rama says we try not to rely on that because Rishonim don't quote that line in the Gemara, and we're concerned that a membrane or a covering will tear. So it seems like the coverings aren't always to be relied on, but there are enough other considerations that you can make for sure to use a covering. Maybe the Allah is like Mishnah Yaakov that there's no such thing as Zeya. Maybe we don't have Zeya nowadays. We only because it's a much thicker steam. Maybe our ovens are open. Maybe I won't bring the time back down. We have all these studim. Rav Sabalevsky Shlita was not comfortable relying on his own Rebbe's Pesach and Rav Shechter's Pesach, that ovens can be used for uncovered meat and dairy even within 24 hours of each other, because the Zeya doesn't have the ability, relying on the idea that the Zeya doesn't have the ability to draw out flavor, just to impart flavor. And therefore, he said, we should treat our ovens as fleishiks and cover the milchiks well enough that Zeya won't come back down. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Zichrono Livracha, used to say, wait 24 hours. If you wait 24 hours, then you're okay. What? Then you assume whatever blios, the Zeya just created blios in the oven, and blios after 24 hours are no sintam lefgam. Some people kosher their ovens in between, but that's tricky also. Because exactly how do you kosher an oven is a tricky discussion. Meaning, let's say you put a davar lachmi, you put something really moist in the oven. Now you need to kosher the oven. So, but by the way, the idea of just simply covering milchigs every single time doesn't always work. Because before Shavuos, apparently to make a good cheesecake, it needs to be uncovered. Who knew? If you cover a cheesecake, it will be like soggy. So the only way to make a good cheesecake, like a little bit of a crusty, dry top, is if it's uncovered. So before Shavuos, rabbis get dozens and dozens of calls about how do I use my oven. So, very often the answer is, wait a second, you just remodeled your kitchen. You have two ovens. Why are you going? Yeah, but it's more convenient. There's always an excuse. There's always like, no matter how many ovens people have, they want to use the same oven. That they use. It's difficult for me to bend down to the lower oven, But Ramesha Faisin had one oven, right? So did his wife not make cheesecake? I don't know. Maybe she made soggy cheesecake. I don't know. Right? But he had one oven. So what you can do is you can kosher the oven in between, unless you're a Moshe. because Rav Meisha has a big chumra about kashering ovens, about what it takes to kasher an oven. So maybe we'll discuss that.
If you put Rav Moshe's chumra and chumra together, you try it, if you have a meat oven, and you try to put the par cookies, for whatever reason, out of nowhere, you end up seeing that there's a from par cookies.
Then you have a problem. Yeah. Yeah. Now, how do you kasher an oven? Let's discuss this briefly. Okay, maybe we'll spend the last few minutes this year just discussing kashering an oven. The Mishnah at the end of Masechta Avodah Zarah tells us there are two basic methods of kashering. There's something called Hagala, that's using a liquid medium to dry out the tam, and there's something called Libun, which is like fire, direct fire, Al Yidei HaEsh, it burns out whatever tam is in there. The problem with the oven is Zaya, right? And the Rush said that Zaya has a din of a liquid. So it would seem that which method should you use for kashering? Hagala, right? Because it's liquid. So that's what you would think. However, it's not really directly from liquid. It's from the Zaya that was produced by liquid, surrounded by a lot of heat. So maybe it needs Libun. The Rishonim develop a new kind of kashering called Libun Kal. It's somewhere in between Hagala and Libun. It doesn't appear in the Gemara. The Rishonim invented this. Instead of using Hagala, they use a direct flame, but not one that gets really, really red hot. You know, not one that will make something super red hot. And the Rishonim say that if you have a kli that really only needs Hagala, you could also do Libun Kal, and it will work as well. So if we assume ovens only need Hagala, then Libun Kal would for sure work. You don't need to take boiling water and splash it all over your oven, right? If you hold that your oven only needs Hagala, you could also do Libun Kal. What is Libun Kal? Says Rabbi Henkin, you turn your oven on high for about a half hour, that's Libun Kal. Rav Moshe disagreed. Rav Moshe held that our ovens need Libun Chamur. It needs full, strong Libun. What is Libun? About 950 degrees. Whoa, our ovens don't go that high. Now, it may depend on why you're kashering the oven. The Gemara at the end of Avodah Zarah says that the distinction between Libun and Hagala is only when Isura Bala, when the oven absorbed treif, something not kosher. But if it was Hetera Bala, then you could always use Hagala. So in kashering in the Beis HaMikdash, the Torah says they did Mariko Shtifa, not Libun. They did the equivalent of Hagala. So that indicates, because Kachim, when the taste of the carbon went into the Kalim, it was Hetera Bala. It wasn't Noser yet. It was kosher. So they were allowed to use Hagala. So kashering between meat and milk is what? Hetera Bala or Yisura Bala? When it absorbed taste, it's Hetera, right? It was kosher food. So if you move into a new house and the previous owner didn't keep kosher, Rav Moshe holds, Libun! But just between milk and flesh, even Rav Moshe would agree, Hagala or Libun Kal would work. However, the Badei HaShulchan writes that our ovens have a din of a Kli Cheres, and therefore Hagala can't work. So you need Libun. One could argue, no, you know why you needed Libun? The principle in kashering is kibolo kach holto. Whatever temperature it went in at, that's the temperature that it's going to come out. You know what our ovens have where you know that are very helpful in this regard? Thermostat, a knob. It only goes up to 450 degrees or 500 degrees. So yeah, that may not be Libun. But maybe you only need a Libun in days where you didn't know how hot it ever got. But if the utensil is made in such a way where it could never get hotter, maybe that works even when you would otherwise need Libun. Rav Moshe did not agree with that Chiddush. He required absolute Libun. And therefore, there are three basic approaches that Gedolei HaPoskim have to how to kasher an oven. Rav Henkin says, you could do Hagala, so therefore Libun Kal is for sure okay. So as long as it gets to Yatzel Adispo on all parts of the oven, it's not very hot at all. Turn the oven on to 300 for a half hour, and you're fine. That's Rav Henkin, Zichrono Livracha. Rav Henkin was the Posek Hadar in America before Rav Meisha came along. What? Ezra's Torah, yeah. He was the president of Ezra's Torah. He would only, the halacha is you're not allowed to be Masarah Gittin at night. L'chachila, it's a chumra. He was only Masada Gittin at night because he had a day job. But he was the biggest expert, so he had, you know, people came to him anyways. He was a very fascinating person. Big, big posik. Others require Libun Gamur, but with the caveat that Kabbalah Kach Polto. And therefore, what would you need to do? Just turn it on the highest it goes. It never gets higher than that. So turn it on the highest it goes for an hour or two, and that'll be good enough. That was the shita of Rav Aaron Cutler. Rav Aaron Cutler said, turn it on for a few hours, and that's good enough. Rabbi Eider, Zichrono Livracha, who was the first one to really write a lot of very good halacha svarim in English that are footnoted very well, Rabbi Eider was a Talmud of Rav Aaron Cutler. He was also a YU graduate, although he was not proud of that. He did not love YU very much. But Rabbi Eider, Zichrono Livracha, said that Rav Aaron Cutler was talking about a certain type of oven, but all the modern ovens nowadays will get to the desired temperature within an hour, so you only need to do it for an hour. That, if I understand correctly, was also the sheet of Rav Soloveitchik, that kasher an oven, you would just turn it on to its highest temperature for an hour. Rav Maisha held that you need libun gamu, and that there's no kibolo kach polta. So you need to bring a blowtorch and get each spot of the oven red hot. Regular people can't do that. Meaning that is not an easy task. Rav Moshe used to recommend oven inserts for people, like a small metal box that just went inside the oven, and that way you didn't have to worry about the blios of the walls, because all the walls were, it was like a blech that covered all the surfaces of the oven. I remember when my brother got married to my sister-in-law, Rav Moshe's great-granddaughter, so my brother took upon himself... he was always a big Rav Moshe fan, you know, he's the only guy I know that learns like all the Dibros Moshes and every Masechta that he's learning. But he took upon himself to follow all of Rav Moshe's Pesachim. And when they moved into their apartment in Baltimore, the previous tenant was not from, and therefore the oven was not kosher, so they got an oven insert. They got this metal box. Problem is, when you turn the oven on 450, that's not the temperature inside the insert. Meaning, it's all messed up. So it drove my sister-in-law crazy. He's like, it's your fault. It's your family. But it was very, very hard to like keep track of the temperature. So what solved this problem was self-cleaning ovens. Self-cleaning ovens get to the desired temperature. They used to, at least when they started with self-cleaning ovens, they got to 900, 950 degrees, whatever. I think 850 is Lima Chama. So self-cleaning ovens got to 950 degrees, and that would satisfy even Rav Moshe. Problem is, in more recent times, they found that self-cleaning ovens are somewhat dangerous because that is a lot of heat. So now they're making self-cleaning ovens that only get to like 600 degrees, which is not so good. And they also have self-cleaning ovens that do get hot enough, but it breaks the oven every time you self-clean it. Don't know why. I don't know why. Why would an oven come with a self-destruct feature? I have no idea. you hit the self-clean and then you just wait for the oven to break and then you call the oven guy and he's got to come and replace the oven. Like I don't know. I don't get it at all. Also, there are those that say that the door of the oven doesn't get as hot as the rest of the oven. But that you could still be making because the zeya probably doesn't come off of the door. Even if the zeya goes off, it probably doesn't go to the side door and come back. And also, the door probably does get as hot. Why wouldn't the door get as hot? Doesn't make sense, right? The whole inside surface of the oven probably should get this, to the same heat. So anyway, so that's as far as kashering ovens. So Be'ezras Hashem tomorrow, I don't know yet. Maybe we'll discuss microwave salt shakers, and maybe we'll start Siman Sadi Gimel also. And then for the Thursday, we'll do the Melachic Bread. Have a great day. Yeah.
I don't like how Moshe, I mean, we say by something that's straight.